As the first Quidditch match of the season, Gryffindor versus Slytherin, drew nearer, their DA meetings were put on hold because Angelina insisted on almost daily practices. The fact that the Quidditch Cup had not been held for so long added considerably to the interest and excitement surrounding the forthcoming game. The Ravenclaws and Hufflepuffs were taking a lively interest in the outcome, for they, of course, would be playing both teams over the coming year. And the heads of house of the competing teams, though they attempted to disguise it under a decent pretense of sportsmanship, were determined to see their side's victory. Harry realized how much Professor McGonagall cared about beating Slytherin when she abstained from giving them homework in the week leading up to the match.
"I think you've got enough to be getting on with at the moment," she said loftily.
Nobody could quite believe their ears until she looked directly at Harry and Ron and said grimly,
"I've become accustomed to seeing the Quidditch Cup in my study, boys, and I really don't want to hand it over to Professor Snape. So use the extra time to practice, won't you?"
Snape was no less obviously partisan. He had booked the Quidditch pitch for Slytherin practice so often that the Gryffindors had difficulty getting on it to play. He was also turning a deaf ear to the many reports of Slytherin attempts to hex Gryffindor players in the corridors. When Alicia Spinett turned up in the hospital wing, with her eyebrows growing so thick and fast that they obscured her vision and obstructed her mouth, Snape insisted that she must have attempted a hair-thickening charm on herself, and refused to listen to the 14 eyewitnesses who insisted that they had seen the Slytherin keeper, Miles Bletchley, hit her from behind with a jinx while she worked in the library. Harry felt optimistic about Gryffindor's chances. They had, after all, never lost to Malfoy's team. Admittedly, Ron was still not performing to Wood's standard, but he was working extremely hard to improve. His greatest weakness was a tendency to lose confidence when he made a blunder. If he let in one goal, he became flustered and was therefore likely to miss more. On the other hand, Harry had seen Ron make some truly spectacular saves when he was on form. During one memorable practice, he had hung one-handed from his broom and kicked the quaffle so hard away from the goal hoop that it soared the length of the pitch and through the centre hoop at the other end. The rest of the team felt this save compared favourably with one made recently by Barry Ryan, the Irish international keeper, against Poland's top chaser, Ladislav Zamoyski. Even Fred had said that Ron might yet make him and George proud, and that they were seriously considering admitting that he was related to them, something, he assured Ron, they had been trying to deny for 4 years. The only thing really worrying Harry was how much Ron was allowing the tactics of the Slytherin team to upset him before they even got onto the pitch. Harry, of course, had endured their snide comments for more than 4 years, so whispers of, "Hey, Potty, I heard Warrington sworn to knock you off your broom on Saturday," far from chilling his blood, made him laugh. "Warrington's aim so pathetic, I'd be more worried if he was aiming for the person next to me," he retorted, which made Ron and Hermione laugh and wiped the smirk off Pansy Parkinson's face. But Ron had never endured a relentless campaign of insults, jeers, and intimidation. When Slytherins, some of them 7th years and considerably larger than he was, muttered as they passed in the corridors, "Got your bed booked in the hospital wing, Weasley," he did not laugh, but turned a delicate shade of green. When Draco Malfoy imitated Ron dropping the quaffle, which he did whenever they were within sight of each other, Ron's ears glowed red and his hands shook so badly that he was likely to drop whatever he was holding at the time, too. October extinguished itself in a rush of howling winds and driving rain, and November arrived, cold as frozen iron, with hard frosts every morning, and icy draughts that bit at exposed hands and faces. The skies and the ceiling of the great hall turned a pale, pearly grey. The mountains around Hogwarts became snow-capped, and the temperature in the castle dropped so far that many students wore their thick protective dragon-skin gloves in the corridors between lessons.